is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, if you ever had a doubt as to President Trump's relationship with the media, or that they see Trump as a threat, that has probably been satisfied at this point, as you see what's happened in this past week since we spoke last on Viewpoint. You remember the reports after President Trump shocked the world with victory then in 2016 campaign. The social media and tech giants, along with even some of the legacy media, began to not only blame themselves for not stepping in sooner. And you recall those reports, and they took some sort of responsibility or guilt almost for it, if you will. And then when they say, well, we should have done something sooner, then I say, well, like what? What is that exactly they were going to do? And here we are. I think we're seeing that right now in the 2020 election. We are in some incredibly uncharted waters here. And let's start here and bring on here Cheryl Atkinson. She is an Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist, a New York Times best-selling author, the host of Sinclair's Full Measure. Twitter, Facebook, there's been a really, I'd say, love-hate relationship, Cheryl, but it's more of a hate relationship, I guess, between the President Trump and the social media giants. So this was all after the New York Post published on its front page what many were calling the smoking gun evidence in the form of these emails showing that Hunter, Joe Biden's son, used his father's name and position to secure favors from the vice president then to benefit this Burisma. Now, although we knew a lot of these facts, the fact that it was now in writing and it's like all in front of you and this laptop was mysteriously left at a computer store, this is like out of a novel somewhere, this whole thing. But I really want to get right to the point of the story, Cheryl, with the suppression of Twitter, Facebook, and what they've done, but also the legacy media, NBC, ABC. There's no reporting on this whatsoever. What do you make of this?
This is really, I think, the culmination of what I've been writing and speaking about for the past couple of years, this narrowing of our information landscape, the control of the news, the internet, and social media by political and corporate interests through more subtle ways initially, such as I call fake fact checking, which was often little more than conflicted interests pretending to fact check something so that they could censor it. And now we've reached the point where you can see that, you know, a news story that people certainly have the right to see and make up their own opinions about is simply erased and washed out as if it never happened, very Orwellian. In a way that I think is very, very dangerous, one of the most dangerous and important threats to our open society and the notion of open information in our society.
Yeah, and they've tried every which way. You know, I'm thinking as you were talking there, even you remember, Cheryl, the all these anonymous reports, every time there even is. Now, it's funny because, or sad, actually, when you see a story like that, Cheryl, and if it was always against Trump, they ran them with anonymous reports. And you never really knew who said what or what said who, but the media was happy to jump onto that. None of that stuff was censored over the past 4 years. Anytime they could dump on the president, they clearly did. Now on the reverse side of that, there's concrete evidence in front of us and they ignore it. Does anybody not see this? I mean, let me give you an example. Even the left, I'm going to suggest to you, everybody knows how blatant this is. Glenn Greenwald, okay, to give you an example, to talk about the left, he had a headline that said, Facebook and Twitter cross a line far more dangerous than what they censor. And he talks about just weeks before the election, the tech giants unite to block access to incriminating reporting about their preferred candidate. Now that's Greenwald saying that, Cheryl. So the hypocrisy is off the charts here, but is America really aware of this? Because ABC, CBS, NBC, all of the likes, they're not reporting anything about this story.
I think there's an awareness, but there's a rationalization among those who are against President Trump that this sort of information control is justified and even welcomed. And they seem to utterly lack the ability to understand that when applied against one side, you're opening the door for it to be, first of all, it's unfair, but then you're also opening the door for it to be applied against you unfairly in the future. And I think they're so out of their mind with the notion of the control that they feel they need to have, or the control they don't want to accede to the other side, to another Trump term, that they're willing to accept the most restrictive and outrageous kinds of information control if it helps them, if it helps them win, or they think it helps them make their case. But I worry about one thing, Malcolm. Okay. A lot of times I hear conservatives say things like, well, they, you know, didn't censor the Trump-Russia collusion stuff that was proven false, and that's correct. Mm-hmm. But I want to be sure that we don't, in the end up asking for more censorship. Well, just do both sides equally. Yeah. I think overall there should be less, I would even say no censorship except that which is illegal. And let's, you know, I'm concerned, I've spoken of this lately, that we're going to go down the road with Congress and all of, okay, well, let's censor more. Let's both sides be censored when they do this or when they do that. I don't think these big tech companies and government should be taking on that role as intermediary of our information at all to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, you it's a great point that you bring out. And that's what I think makes your message so powerful, is you're looking into the weeds of this argument, really, and saying, OK, but what if we do that? We're in a dangerous road right now. I mean, I don't ever see us having been here before. How do we get back from this? Sure, like you say, OK, if they all start censoring, and which is happening now, how do we get back from this? So I'm not even sure, Cheryl, if there's a coming back from this. I mean, it's easy, like you say, for us to sit here and give everybody hell and talk about it. But this is no different than, I'll tell you right now, China, Russia, Iran, the USSR, when they censored everything. And you've got we give everybody else hell around the world. And now our own tech giants are putting their hands on the scale here in a way we've never seen before. How do we get back from this? Because they're not exactly going to sit down and take our word for it, or, you know, I mean, they're fighting back, Cheryl. How do we get back from this?
Well, I think it's tough, especially now that there are calls for the government to get involved again, that mm-hmm. could put us in the wrong direction, you know, with the government having more control and then more control being okay. exerted on the content of what we see, when I think there ought to be less. But people a lot smarter than I am about technology, and I've been speaking about them with them about this sort of thing for the past maybe 2 years or so, they say there are platforms and ways to sort through this where big tech does not have the control that we've currently given them. Hmm. We've given them to censor our information. There's ways to make the platforms be independent, where you can't be an account that's taken down and yet you can still participate in the social media. And I'm not sure technically what that requires, but there are people working on that problem and hoping and fairly optimistic that we can move to that model in the future.
Interesting. Yeah. And you're absolutely right when you say, you know, well, you want more government control. You know, there's always an argument behind the argument. And you're exactly right, because if that's what you want, well, it's coming. And that's not exactly shouldn't be on the conservative wish list either. What do you think about the Section 230? Does that go away now? I mean, that's going to be front and center when they meet up in Congress. Congress is subpoenaing them now and all. But what do you think happens to that?
Well, I have two thoughts about that. Mm-hmm. First of all, the same worry that if Congress says, and the threat now is, well, we're going to lift the immunity that these big tech companies have from lawsuits because they've engaged in editorial control. They're not just providing a service or a pipeline. They're actually interceding editorially. Therefore, they shouldn't get immunity from lawsuits. Well, where do you think that leads? If you lift immunity, they have more reason to censor, because now they say, this is my fear, well, we might get sued over X, Y, or Z. So now we have to play more editorial than we even were doing before. Now we have to censor more material. Now we have to fact check more material. Again, I think that's the wrong direction. Maybe the answer would be, and I believe I saw the head of the FCC, Ajit Pai, just in the last couple of days, tweet out that the FCC has the authority to interpret or to clarify what Section 230 is supposed to do. And if there was a clarification that said, mm-hmm. yeah. these platforms must take no role editorially except that which is illegal, you know, that may be happening on their platforms, but everything else is to be untouched for them to get the liability. That might move us in the right direction and stop them from these fake fact checks, the censoring, the culling through certain information in a one-sided fashion. Maybe that would help.
Yeah, no, that's a great point with the FCC. You're correct with that. That did happen. And, you know, the argument before all this happened, Cheryl, that I would always question, I assume you probably did too, is how the left owned everything. I mean, how is it that they figured this out years ago and own all of these social media giants and these tech companies and Googles and YouTubes and everything else? I mean, it's pretty blatant in your face. The right or the conservative movement or patriots are paying a price for that I don't know what you want to call it, Cheryl, lax behavior, but don't you think?
I do. And when those on the right try to match, for example, there's a Silicon Valley young man that felt chased out of Silicon Valley because he outed himself as a Trump supporter in 2016. Oh. And he has tried to start a Twitter alternative called Gab, which was immediately attacked and controversialized by the left and by, you know, competitors as is some sort of crazy racist forum that attracts, you know, crazy racist people. And then people would secretly, under anonymous names, post racist stuff and then point to the media and say, look, Gab is a racist forum. I mean, there was just an all-out attack. Mm. And then he was deplatformed every time he tried to get the business going. Well, the bank won't accept your money. Well, the host will not host your, you know, website. I'm using the wrong terminology because technically I don't know all the proper terminology, but they make it almost impossible for another competitor to start, whether it's conservative or independent, because they have such a hold on everything, kind of top to bottom. And again, it's a scary time in terms of information control in our society.
Yeah, and we're on that Gab and Parler, as you just say. Now, Parler's another one. And let me talk to you about these dueling town halls that were just this week here when the debate was canceled because of Scully throwing that. I mean, that was amazing. I mean, the presidential commission debate certainly had egg on their face with Scully and that whole thing on Twitter, sending that off to Scaramucci and all that was a story unto itself. But these dueling town halls, so you had ABC News with moderator George Stanopoulos. That was, I think, about 90 minutes, I believe. And it was interesting. And then you had Trump on NBC with Savannah Guthrie, which ended up being a debate, actually. She was debating Savannah Guthrie in NBC. And, of course, this president, I have to tell you, I think, and I don't know if you agree with this, Cheryl, but he's brazen enough that he doesn't back down to these kinds of things. Now, other candidates like a Biden or most candidates will walk into the lion's den like that. Trump is really, he's fearless with that sort of thing. He looks at any exposure or publicity as good. He sort of knows how that media game works. And he's willing to step into anything. He sort of probably knew what he was getting into. She was very aggressive. Very aggressive. And he could have blown that out of the water probably any time if he stepped on her in any way, being a woman and admitted it would have been a news story from here to you know where. But right away, I'm seeing the reports, Cheryl, to say, oh, Biden's town hall, more viewership. Well, and somehow they're pointing that down as a flag in the sand that that's a victory somehow, that he's the popular one. But that's an oxymoron, too, because obviously people were tuning into Biden to see if he could put three words together. I mean, clearly he was a more interesting look to see could he stand and he sat, I guess. But could he, you know, follow this through? Do you think that was the case with those messages? And what do you think of the debates?
Well, I'd have to study more carefully, but I believe what I saw was when cable was factored in, Trump had substantially more viewers on his. It's hard to know why some people are watching one or the other, because you could argue, you know, people hate Trump and like to watch him because they hate him. Or you could argue people, like you said, wanted to see if Biden could put three words together, or maybe they were watching because they like him. I'm not sure the numbers mean anything, but you're correct in the sense that they were used by the media to make it look as though Biden is popular and Trump is not. The media takes almost every bit of information that's out there and spins it or twists it in a way that's used. I call it propaganda when I write about it in my books and when I speak about it. This is propaganda that we're getting, and the media and the news have become part and parcel of these propaganda tools. And so in this instance, whoever got the bigger ratings was going to be, at least you, what you thought, the word that was leaked out first was that Biden won the ratings war, when in fact, again, like I saw, when cable was factored in, Trump had substantially more viewers. But that'll be spun once that comes out as a negative way to Trump somehow by those who don't like him. I mean, the information is just not put out there in a fair way anymore for people to draw their own conclusions. We're just told what to think about it by conflicted interests.
Cheryl, will that backfire in the whole scope of things? What you say right there is so accurate. Will this backfire on the perpetrators we're speaking about with this notion that they can twist everything the way they're doing, including all the polls and everything else? I mean, isn't there a price to pay for that? And I'm just asking, I don't know. Or do they get away with it, do you think? I mean, it's outlandish, this whole thing that we're talking about.
It's hard to measure. I think there was a price paid for that in 2016, because despite Trump's enemies spending more money, having control largely of the media, having a lot of false news stories put out there about him, he still won. Well, he still yet may have been hurt by all of that. Maybe he would have won by far more if not for the other tactics that I mentioned. It's hard to know. But I do think there is a backlash. And for those who have tried to oppose Trump in 2020 for what may be legitimate reasons, they've kind of drowned away because the sky has been falling, according to Trump's opponents and enemies, for 4 years, when the sky really never did fall. But the sky has been falling for so long that even if there are arguments that some voters might think are legitimate, I think a lot of them tune out because so little of this has come to pass that they've accused him of. Because every day is a crisis. You know, anything he does is the worst thing you could ever do. And I do think there's an element of numbness or backfiring that takes place with that.
Well, if it's reflective in his rallies and the enthusiasm of the people, I think that could be a lot of truth to what you say there. We're going to find out soon enough, clearly, as November 3rd is coming pretty quick here. And of course, we may not even know on the 3rd of November. As you know, it may be quite after that, which brings me to the story of the election integrity now, Cheryl, which is, you know, we're hearing all these reports, the drip, 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 and there's a whole series of them. I got pages full of them, of these reports of, you know, funny things happening to the ballots of all kinds. They're finding them in all kinds of areas, or they're being stolen or marked on. And it's become sort of a big national scandal. I mean, my golly, we don't have to worry about Russia or China doing this stuff. We're doing it to ourselves here. And the media, I think, has made a mockery out of this whole thing, is my guess. I'm just guessing here. But listen, this last report that just came across here Friday sometime, I believe, was the Louisville, WDRB there reported bins full of ballots in a dumpster that was at a house that was under construction. The contractor at the house found those crates full of undelivered ballots. And that's the story. I mean, these things are weird. It's like the aliens are coming in and stealing our ballots, Cheryl.
And where are they? You know, they're found in the strangest places, like you say. If you were going to steal or not deliver ballots, I'm not sure why you would burn them or something. I guess they don't want to get caught. But they're turning up, you know, the ones we're catching in weird places. And again, it's hard to know. It would be nice if each side, if you're going to have this kind of fraud or mistakes, if each side were equally impacted, it wouldn't matter, right? But it's just hard to know who that hurts the worst. And there's a feeling out there, I think, among both Democrats and Republicans, that the mailings, for whatever reason, benefit Democrats, which is why they're pushing so hard for it. And Republicans are, in general, so against it. I don't know how it really sorts out. I think a lot of both Democrats and Republicans are voting by mail this time, a lot more than usual. And it's anybody's guess as to how all of that sorts out, but it is concerning.
Let me ask you this here, because I think you're the perfect one to answer it. And my bigger overarching question is, how did we get here? And a lot of people point to the Trump administration. Well, he's pulled out the worst of people and they hate Trump, or the media, just this hate relationship. But back in 2015, you did a talk at Hillsdale College, and you're a great public speaker. I've seen you many times. And this one was on the investigative journalism and the Obama administration. And it was mentioned in there that it was the least transparent administration we've covered to date. Well, back in March 2014, the New York Times reporter James Risen spoke at an investigation journalism event in Berkeley and called the Obama administration the greatest enemy of press freedom in at least a generation. So talk to me about that Obama versus Trump, where we're at. This all didn't happen in the last 3.5-4 years. You had the 8 years that were pretty volatile in our country with the Obama administration too. What's your assessment of it?
Well, people don't remember that among a core of reporters groups, the Obama administration was considered very controversial. There were articles written by left-leaning journalists that talked about the Obama administration being the most dangerous for whistleblowers and press freedoms of any that had come to pass so far. And I would agree with that assessment in terms of a lot that happened under the Obama administration. They had more tools than ever with the internet and so on to spy on journalists, me included, and others. They had more tools with which they went after federal whistleblowers and not those who were, you know, just releasing classified information for bad reasons, but those who were blowing the whistle on improper or illegal actions going on inside the federal government, those kind of whistleblowers we journalists like, of course, and want to hear from. So it was a big problem. They were, the Obama administration issued executive order to withhold documents in the Fast and Furious story that I covered. That was the first and only time I believe the administration did that to make sure we didn't get documents on a big scandal. So a lot of problems were coming in. How has the media then been so directed against the Trump administration? Because you would never know there were those problems today under the last administration. And you would think, and some have said, this one has been, even at the start of it, the worst ever, you know, for journalists. And I think a lot of that is was manufactured. And I trace in my last book, The Smear, the origins of some of this effort to controversialize Trump. You can find dates, you can find and follow the money, who's responsible for some of these narratives that never existed about this man for 70 years. Wow. When he was largely in the public eye until the campaign to controversialize him when he was running for president. I don't know anybody, and I'm not a political analyst, so I go by just a lot of anecdotes and watching, maybe as an outsider's, maybe why I correctly predicted Trump was going to win starting in 2015. But what I see this time is a lot of people who support Trump, I think more than before, a lot of people who hate him, but almost nobody I hear from personally, if I can't think of anyone who supports Biden. So if someone's voting for Biden, they're voting against Trump. There is a lot of anti-Trump sentiment. But I think that's notable to say that nobody I've talked to is enthusiastic about Biden personally. They're enthusiastic about disliking Trump.
Yeah, which explains that poll you do. You do these cool little polls on your site at CherylEtkinson.com. I've seen, and you would pose the question out there about that, and 92% of 1,330 respondents said they think Trump will be elected to a second term. 3% said Biden, and 5% said they have no idea. And this was, you know, do you believe Trump will win regardless of who they support? That kind of plays to the point you're talking about, right? You made the prediction last time in 2015. What's your prediction this time based on that poll? And, well, whatever else you have in your...
Well, and there's another poll, I think the one up there now I'm doing, said, are you voting primarily for Trump, against Trump, for Biden, or against Biden? And it's the same trend that we've talked about. But I would say if I had to pick, again, I'm not a political analyst, and maybe I just got lucky last time, but I think Trump wins in a fair election. I'm going to write an article about this soon, because I think he still has the support among those who supported him originally. And I think he has more support among those who didn't and saw that the sky didn't fall, the economy didn't crash the day he was elected, as was predicted. He didn't start World War III. You know, there's so many things that didn't come true that maybe people really did fear, that I think he's brought more aboard. He's brought more African-Americans aboard. He's brought, you know, this is anecdotally from my experience, from what I've seen, he's brought more minorities and Democrats aboard. The wild card is turnout. Doesn't really matter, you know, if he's got more support than before, if a lot more people come out to vote who don't like him, who always didn't like him. So I guess that's the wild card. But if I had to put money on it, Malcolm, I say President Trump wins again.
It's going to be interesting. In these next 4 years, it's going to be quite fascinating. And you and I both know that. And it certainly gives us a lot to talk about. Now, let me tell folks now that you have got, I think the timing on this is really quite something. And I only discovered this Early this morning, actually, overnight, and then early this morning, I had a chance to look at it, actually. This new book you have coming out next month is quite something. And I when I seen it, I said, oh, my God, she's on it, because this is like just incredible opportunity to set the record straight again. And the book is called Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. Now, by the way, and I want to tell listeners now, that book is a pre-order situation. It's not out till like November something, right, I believe, Cheryl?
Yes, November 24.
Okay. But there is a link in the America Out Loud bookstore that'll put you right in there to get Cheryl's book. It's on Amazon. Of course, you get anywhere you get books, of course, as always. But you go ahead and if you go to our navigation bar on AmericaOutLoud.com, there is a, as you know, there's a link there to the bookstore. You can it'll drop you right in there. And as you're hearing this morning on Sunday, you can hear that and get that book, of course, and pre-order it at this point, of course. So, Cheryl, this is quite something. Obviously, we don't have a lot of time to jump into it now, but the timing on this, give me the elevator cliff notes on this in the last moment or so we have left, please. And we'll regroup again. And I want to talk more about this book with you and what you're trying to accomplish with it. But tell us about that.
It's about the control of the information landscape by political and special interests. We're talking about control of the news, social media, who's really behind it, the dollars being spent. And also I call it the death of the news as we once knew it. There's a chapter about the devolution of CNN where I used to work. There's a chapter about the devolution of the New York Times. There's a complete list of media mistakes in the era of Trump, the only comprehensive list of its kind that I know of. And we hear for the first time from more than a dozen news insiders, current and former top executives at ABC, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, New York Times, and so on, about what's happened to the news. And you'll be surprised to hear a lot of journalists are just as worried as the rest of America about what's happened to the news.
Cheryl, if we don't correct what's happening right now out there, what we're talking about right now, and I'll end it here with this last thought, we're talking about changing our free speech and the landscape of our great country. If we don't correct our past misgivings right this moment, and I'm serious when I say this, I think we're looking at a pretty abrupt change here in America. Do you agree with that or not?
I wholeheartedly agree. I think this is one of the clearest and present most present danger we're facing. And people are not always seeing it for what it is. They're cheering on the censorship and the curating of our information because they think it benefits them or their candidate, and not understanding that we're transforming our society. And there may be a point where there's no going back if we keep going down this road.
That's exactly it. That is my fear, exactly what Cheryl says right there. And again, there's a whole chapter of life I'm speaking about. And I'll say, Cheryl Atkinson, you're one of those few, I think, really on a handful of people that have integrity as a journalist that never, and I compliment you for that, but you never seem to sell yourself out. You stay true to what the message is. And for that, I think that's what we need more of in this country. And I compliment you for that, for sure. So listening here to the voice of Cheryl Atkinson and the book again in the bookstore, we'll talk much more on all of that, but it makes a lot of sense what we've been discussing here. Now, up next, I want to turn into more of the intelligence, but really we're talking about national security here. Let's take the approach of that. National security being compromised. Have a blockbuster segment coming up next. Stay right there, friends. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep Stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthycell.com/sleep.
Welcome back to Viewpoint this Sunday. Let's bring on here Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst. She is a political commentator, a host of the Friedman Report here at America Out Loud. Before we jump into any nuances of this, I want to talk at really 30,000 feet with you about national security. You know, we just pointed out the other day on my daily program on The Voice of a Nation, and Michael Johns and I were talking about that and the national security being compromised here. And there's no, since this is being ignored by all the networks and all the media at large, you know, if we have this information right now on all these emails and all this information, laptops and all the stuff that is now in the light of day, Ilana, it is safe to say that clearly China, Russia and other actors have all this information as well, I would assume. Talk to us about what you believe as an intelligence analyst is the national security implications of this failure, please.
Well, one of the major national security issues here is that the Biden family has a conflict of interest that is so huge that it not only dwarfs some of the accusations against the Clintons, but it goes into some of our deepest relationships or confrontational relationships, is what I should say, with countries like China and Russia, and in this case with the Ukraine, which is not a, we're not in a conflict situation with Ukraine, but the Biden's interest became more important than the national interests of the United States. So when you think in terms, for example, of the fact that Joe Biden went over there and bragged about this, by the way, and did not want to, and bragged about the fact that he withheld a promised loan guarantee to Ukraine of $1 billion, but was willing to withhold it if they didn't fire a prosecutor who was investigating a company, Burisma, as it happens, an energy company in Ukraine, on which had hired his son to be on their board. And this is such a conflict of interest, and it interfered with our national policy, which was in this case to underwrite or to guarantee a loan, $1 billion loan on the part of Ukraine. That's one situation. In China, the same thing happened, that Hunter Biden used his father's position and influence to secure $1 billion investment and a partnership in a Chinese company that was owned by the Chinese Communist government. And these kinds of things interfere directly with the policies of the United States. So for example, if the United States wants to pursue a policy, a certain policy with China, but it's in, and Biden is president, and it's in his family's best interest to make it a financially successful venture in a private sector area because it benefits his family, that may be directly in contrast, or in conflict rather, to the Americans, the American government and the American people's best interest. And we are coming to a point of great confrontation with China, and it is definitely a threat to our national security.
The media seems to be looking the other way. There are no reports of these stories on any of the legacy networks of NBC, CBS, ABC. Many of the publications have completely ignored this entire story. Now, clearly, you know, we understand they want Biden to win. That's obvious on all levels, including all the tech giants and all the social media operations and all the media, the legacy. Everybody is in that corner here wanting a Joe Biden victory here. But the real question becomes, what do the Americans want? What do real people want that, you know, are out here? That's where we elect a president, not by these tech firms and these heads of state here that run these operations in our country. You know, they seem to be either just ignoring the story because they want Biden to win, but somehow they're willing to compromise all of this, Ilana, even with the severity of these stories. And you said it real well a moment ago, where we seem to be coming to a flashpoint, I guess, is what I might call it to you with in regards to China. All indications are that that is happening more and more, that we'd like it not to happen, but looks like we're headed somewhere with them in short order. It's hard to fathom with the national security that these other players, do they see it? Do you think all these operations, and they're just willing to ignore it because they really so badly want Biden to win? I can't come to a proper conclusion on this entire story to understand what they're trying to do here and the severity of this story.
Well, the story is extremely severe, and you have different players who are acting in it. You have the media who is ignoring it. You have the Democratic machine, the Democrat machine, which is ignoring it or denying it. And then you have the actual players. You have China, which wants Biden to win because they are, you know, they are disgusted with Trump, who actually, you know, he had their number and he just called it. And Ukraine is a different story because the president actually has a minor relationship with the President Zelensky, with whom he seems to be getting along okay. So this is a situation where you've got people who are supporting a criminal enterprise. The media is supporting a criminal enterprise. The Democrat machine is supporting a criminal enterprise.
And they're willing to do it, Ilana. They're willing to do it.
They're absolutely willing to do it. And they're bending over backwards to make sure that Biden is protected. So, you know, but I don't see any way that this is not going to come to some kind of a head at some point. Even the mainstream media, although they're ignoring this news today, at some point they're going to have to come to terms with it, because it's not, you can't keep a lid on this pot.
Right.
This is going to just boil over, and we're going to have a scandal of major proportions. Yeah,
and it's not going away anytime soon, very clearly. Let me say to you, they've been trying to get Biden to get on the record, of course. And, you know, one thing I will say to you is the Biden campaign and Joe Biden, you must admit this, Ilana, they have been remarkably disciplined. For a guy who has never had any discipline in his life as a politician, they have really spent some time drilling into him. I'm certain of this. If you were a fly in the wall and could see the meetings they were having in there, campaign. It is very impressive the discipline they've instilled into this candidate now, who has never had discipline in his 47 years plus. Now, all of a sudden, he's being entirely, and he's not saying anything about a lot of these stories. He's like, for instance, the other one, Pack on the Supreme Court, same thing. Very disciplined, not giving an answer back, playing along. They seem to have a strategy here. They've really spent some time, the DNC, with strategizing on this election to see how to make him victorious, seeing that he is not really a very exciting candidate for the Democrat Party. Well, finally, Biden was approached from a CBS News reporter, Bo Erickson, here about the New York Post story. This happened about Friday, I believe it was. And he was asked, Mr. Biden, the reporter said, Mr. Biden, what is your response to the New York Post story about your son, sir? And he responds, Biden says, Ilana, he says, I know you'd ask it, you know, in his usually arrogant tone, of course, because he gets very nasty and negative when you ask him anything about anything he doesn't want. He says, I have no response. It's another smear campaign right up your alley. Those are the questions you always ask. Now, here's a man. He has got a full pass on all this. And this is what he puts out there. What do you say to that?
Well, I think he, you know, when you get him to talk spontaneously, he says very silly things.
Yeah.
It makes me very suspicious, and this is just my opinion. This is not the opinion of this network. It makes me very suspicious that when he gets out in public, as he did in the debate and as he did in the so-called town hall the other night, when he gets out there, he's juiced up on something. I don't understand how it is that he can talk extemporaneously and make gaffe after gaffe after gaffe, really bad ones, and yet come out on stage in this town hall, let's say, and be perfect.
Do you think they may have him on something, you're suggesting, maybe?
That is my personal opinion, that there's something that goes on behind the scenes. I don't think it's anything in his ear, because He didn't appear to be listening to anything.
Well, the president has asked for drug tests and other things, but of course they laugh and all chuckle it off. But because he wants to see other people have your suspicion as well. It is remarkable the difference in him based on what you say there. But turn into this next story, which is really an eye opener here. If you haven't heard this out there, my friends, listen to this one. So the United Nations has just elected China, Russia, and Cuba to its Human Rights Council, okay? And of course, the United States came out and slammed them for that. A lot of other countries did too, like Israel and others could not believe this. We're talking some of the worst human rights abusers, the worst in the world by far here. And interestingly enough, you might recall out there, and let me remind you in case you forgot, that the United States withdrew from the council in 2018, you might remember that story, and talked about its anti-Israel bias and you know, again, their welcoming gestures to countries that violate human rights. Well, obviously, Ilana, that had no impact on them, even though we're not part of that specific council anymore. They pretty well threw their thumb or nose up to the United States and anyone else who cares, and said, we're going to do what we want to do. And they are putting all these countries that are the major abusers of human rights in our country. Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, says these elections only further validate the U.S. decision to withdraw and use other venues and opportunities to protect and promote universal human rights. You can't make this story up, Ilana.
And it's not the first time they've done it. Last year, they put Venezuela on. And they've been doing this for a long time. One year they put Iran on. You can't, when you think about the irony of the fact that only a year ago, the United Nations commissioned an investigation of China and the oppression of the Uyghurs and concentration camps and all the horrible things that they did. And now they're putting China on the Human Rights Council. That's insane. Yeah. You know, it's beyond anything that is reasonable. We should not be part of the United Nations, and they should leave you, or at least they should not be here in the United States.
Interesting.
Because they are, look at how the United Nations was founded. It was founded on some democratic principles that were really important after the Second World War.
Yeah.
But look what's happened. The massive number of the majority of members are countries that have no experience with democracy and are not interested in democracy.
Well, it's become a whole other thing than what it was intended to be, Ilana. It's a whole
totally
other thing.
Totally corrupt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So big thank you to Ilana Friedman. Listen, this election being right in front of us now, and let's talk about the path to victory. And there's a documentary out now on PBS called Battleground. Very fascinating. And it dives into, and you might remember this actually, Northampton County in Pennsylvania, when President Trump took Pennsylvania. You remember the eyebrows went up even further as he marched to victory there in the 2016 campaign. Well, we're now looking at that same county and that same state and that same area. Interesting documentary out that talks about this with the dueling campaigns between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump back in the day and how that impacts the election today. We'll take that up next, friends. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. And like us, we're pretty sure you're not happy about any of it. But this is the America we now find ourselves in. AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world, featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we pull forward now to election 2020 in this pivotal race here, you know, it's often good to look back a little bit and see how we got here. And as we know that, we get back to 2015 and 2016 in the election. And many people still question today, how did Trump pull this off? I mean, it was clearly unprecedented, but you remember the looks on the faces on the election night when all that happened. And one of the areas, one of the states was Pennsylvania. And nobody thought, well, Trump can't take Pennsylvania. Get out of here. It's not going to happen. The epicenter of all of that is an area you may even recall in the news stories was Northampton County. It was sort of the center, the epicenter, if you will. And they say it's a great microcosm, I guess, of the area of Pennsylvania as a whole. And then it resonates out from there to the entire country, of course. So let's talk about this interesting film. I want to tell you about a documentary called Battleground. I have seen the film just out on PBS. I'll tell you more about that. And it's available for you to watch. But it's a piece of history and a piece of maybe forecasting what might happen next. Now, let me bring on here first here, Jonah Markowitz. He is the co-director, a producer, and director of photography for this great movie, and Himmel Trivedi. She's a director and producer. It's an honor to have both of them here. So let's bring it right back to Northampton County and the spirit of this documentary film, what you were trying to accomplish. And as I remember, Jonah, back then, as everybody recalls, there were really two competing forces in America, although there was a lot of cover-up with not admitting the power that Bernie Sanders had and what was happening in that campaign. But there were two movements going on simultaneously. I would suggest to you, this is my words now, in America, you have the Bernie bros, that movement there, and you had, of course, the Trump MAGA movement. Both of these were major movements. And it all sort of came into Northampton. Tell me about the spirit of what you were accomplishing here with Battleground, but the significance of Northampton County and what took place there, please, in that historic campaign.
Sure. Thank you for having us on, Malcolm. Appreciate it. So in 2016, Hamel and I went out to Northampton County to figure out basically what was going on. Because, you know, Hamel and I are both in the New York City area, and a lot of those shocked faces that you were talking about were our neighbors in New York. And I must say the newspapers, the major papers of record, had it completely wrong. And so we went out there basically to figure out what went wrong and what's actually going on in the battlegrounds of America, so to speak.
And that was kind of the spark then that sparked this whole project, huh? To see what went wrong, right? I mean, or what went right, I guess some people would say. They would argue that point, Jonah, right?
Well, when I say what went wrong, I mean that what went wrong in terms of the media's ability
exactly.
to forecast this thing.
Exactly.
I don't mean what went wrong.
No. It's good. It's perfect. Perfect way to say it, actually. No, because it did go wrong, actually. But I'm just saying, to be a smart guy, some people would argue what went right. It just depends. It depends where you fall in that equation. Before we dive into the nitty-gritty of the film and all that, but right now across our great country, everybody in the media world that you're predicting have those faces on are doing the same thing this time around. All the polls, all the publications, all the prognosticators, everybody is, oh my God, it's going to be this, that, or the other, Biden, you know. It's the same story, except you could change out Hillary Clinton's name for Joe Biden. So here's the question I have for you. Do they have it right this time, or do they have it wrong, or do you know?
Well, listen, I do think that there is some repetition going on from 2016 to now. I don't think these institutions of media take a long time to redirect. And I don't think that one shocking victory was enough to tell them that they did have it wrong. I do think that this race is going to be closer than the polls suggest. I think our time in Northampton County and in the Lehigh Valley has certainly taught us that these polls are not the end-all be-all, and that there can be surprises. And I do expect it to be a closer election than what the polls are suggesting.
Okay, fair enough. Himmel Trivedi, let me go to you now. Let me start and ask you that same question, Himmel, that Jonah just answers now. What is your gut feeling tell you, please, in regards to all of this media business and poll business and the shocked faces back to that campaign to today, 2020? What do you think?
Well, you know, I was one of those shocked faces. You know, I live in an ethnic enclave in New Jersey, and I don't know much of America besides New Jersey and my neighborhood. And when I found out that Trump won, I was really surprised. And I was wondering, how did that happen? And I went to find out, and soon I realized that I live in a bubble. And so I went to Northampton County, because that was a county that voted 2 times Obama and 1 time Trump. As I investigated, what I saw was that, you know, in the beginning, we started mingling in the Democratic circles, and we started looking at the grassroots movements in the Democratic Party. And they were all in disbelief, and they were all trying to figure out, what do we do? They were like literally scrambling. You know, there were a lot of like small sporadic groups that came up, that popped up. Over a period of time, I think Bernie Sanders' campaign sort of solidified some of that grassroots energy. But now, even now, I feel like some of that energy is dispersed.
It's hard to imagine, Jonah, that Bernie Sanders was the last man standing with all of that. What do you think was behind that as to why that he was the last man with all the everything being fair and square? Any gut feeling on that?
I think Bernie Sanders took the world by surprise in 2016, and the Democratic Party establishment took them by surprise, knocked them onto their heels. And you saw what happened when the Democratic Party establishment got knocked onto their heels. They wouldn't give up on who they thought would be the next successor, right? And I think to some degree that the establishment had another 3-4 years to make sure that wouldn't happen again. Yeah. And that's what you saw when Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg dropped out. They immediately solidified around Biden, and the race was kind of over from there. So they were not going to be surprised again in the same way that they were.
Yeah, it seems like they pulled out all the stops, to your point. You're right. In fact, I was just talking earlier in the show about the discipline with Joe Biden, and the discipline with the Biden campaign is really remarkable for a politician that has had so many blunders and bad strategic steps over his political career. Himmel, in the film you have Tom Carroll, who's a Trump delegate. He was a chairman of the nation's largest Tea Party chapter, you say here. And Greg Edwards is a black pastor. I've seen both. He's a progressive leader. He was, of course, a big supporter of Bernie Sanders. Let's talk about the commonality of these two groups, because that really was an eye-opening moment of that historical election. An amazing synergy with the grassroots movement that you were just referencing a moment ago, Himmel. Speak about that, please, and how you tried to capture that in the film.
So, you know, when we first started this film, we wanted to make a nonpartisan film. So we went on
good luck.
No, we tried. And I think we were successful. The fact that, you know, Greg Edwards also supports this film, and we are talking on a radio host, radio talk, you know, by Michael Johns. So I think we have been somewhat successful in that pursuit.
Well, let me jump in here and tell folks now that Michael Johns is in the movie. My colleague and host here on our platform is, of course, the co-founder of the Tea Party movement. He was there, and I think it was Lehigh Valley, wasn't it, Himmel?
Yes.
Yeah, he spoke, and he speaks a whole speech in the film. It captures that moment. Go ahead, as you were saying.
So, you know, when we wanted to make a nonpartisan film, and we went on an open-ended quest to understand what happened in the valley and what's probably going to happen in the future. And what we saw is that a lot of people in Greg Edwards' campaign, or a lot of people who are supporters of Greg Edwards, and a lot of people who are Tom Carroll's supporter, or they are in the Tom Carroll camp, we saw that they both had very similar background. In the sense, you know, they may not be of the same race, but they all belong to the same socioeconomic class, and they all had the same level of suffering. You know, it's an economy that left them behind, and they had different ways of looking at how to find solutions to their common problems, but their problems were exactly the same. And that's when we realized that the divide in America is not left and right, but it's actually top and bottom. Mm. And it's the top that divides us all at the bottom and pits us against each other and puts our raw emotion on fire. So we keep fighting with each other as against working together to find solutions.
Himmel, let me ask you, isn't that the attraction of Donald Trump, what you just said, back to the up and down, the elites? He comes across as a really more of an attraction to the blue collar, to the businessman. He speaks real English. The attraction to how he talks is really an anomaly in political circles and certainly in our country historically. Isn't that the attraction to Donald Trump?
I think the attraction to Donald Trump in Tea Party is exactly that. It's just that if you ask the progressives, they are not going to agree with it. So, you know, Donald Trump is a very divisive figure right now, partly because of that. And, you know, he is an anomaly, partly because the fact that he's an anomaly.
Yeah, if I may here, Malcolm, I think you've touched on exactly sort of that commonality. And the commonality is in the way that Donald Trump addressed people's real pain, right? I mean, he said to people, I see that you're suffering. I can do something about it. I will be a strong leader for this nation. I will put America first. I will bring back jobs here. I will be the leader that you guys need. And that is the commonality between a Bernie Sanders and a Trump-like figure. I mean, Bernie said, although the two have different ideologies, yes, but they are both appealing to the pain of their constituencies. And the pain of their constituencies is remarkably similar. If you strip down all of the sort of all of the talking points that both of them use, the pain is similar. And that is the human common ground that we found between the Tea Party and the progressive left.
And isn't Trump a threat to the entire system? Clearly, this is why right now they're trying to pull out all the stops to pull him down. Wouldn't you say that's accurate, Jonah?
I mean, I would say that Trump doesn't play by the rules that the people who have always been in power, be it from the Republican establishment or the Democratic establishment, play by. 100%. And so, sure, a system that sees an outsider come in and not play by their rules will certainly not be too happy with that.
That's right.
And that's why I think this film is really important in this time, is that I think that Trump, a person who is emblematic of someone who doesn't play by the rules, who is trying to address people's pain and speak directly to people, is also happens to be one of the most divisive of all time, right? And so you have the establishments of both parties saying, hey, this guy's out of line. We can't go there. But I think people need to look at what he's trying to do. And is what he's trying to do all that different from someone who's outside the political establishment on the left? And look at and if you take that viewpoint, I think you get out of some of the hysteria. And right. you have a more clear look at where we're going as a nation.
Your analysis is perfect there. It really is a very good analysis and thought here. So the film, again, let's get right to the point of how people can see this film. It's on PBS stations, and it's also, I think, streaming as well. Jonah, how do people see the film?
Well, first, if you want to see the film, you can go to battlegroundfilm.com, and that's our website, and you can go to the watch tab, and we'll keep you updated as to where the film will be playing. But yes, it'll be on PBS in local markets all over the nation, and it's available to stream online. But again, go to battlegroundfilm.com, and you can take a look at where it's playing.
Well, you're both so well-spoken, and I'd love to chat further with both of you, Himmel Trivedi and Jonah Markowitz, both. They did this fabulous film, directors and co-directors and producers here for the film here. Now, it's called Battleground again. Check it out. I just watched it. It's very fascinating, very interesting. It's good to have some historical context and also to be informed as we're moving forward. Finish our first hour of the program. Let me mention, coming up next in our second hour, well, who we just talked about, yours truly, and Michael Johns will join me for the second hour in a moment here. And I'll razz him on this film now that I'll remind him about his ego. Right, Jonah?
And him, take it easy on him. He did great.
Exactly. He did do very well, but he's authentic as they come here. We'll take that up all next, my friends, on Viewpoint. Thank you again, as always, for being with me on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.